we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, today on the show, we have Annie Downs. Elizabeth and I just got off a call. That was just such an encouraging conversation, wasn't it?
So good. Could have gone way longer.
Way longer. Annie is an author. She's a speaker. She's a podcaster. She's a lot of things. She's an amazing human. And we just had the most lovely conversation. And you met her in a unique way. There was like some fun overlap.
Yeah, mom and I went to an event last February, and John Mark just so happened to hear that we were there, and he knew the people putting it on. And so he said, hey, let me see if I can get you just some seats in like the reserved seating area.
Yeah, it was very
kind.
And
so we said, sure, let's go for it. And so I get this text from John Mark. He says, I've got you guys seats, and my friend Annie's going to try to say hi to you guys and introduce you to some people. And I'm thinking, well, that's amazing. But like, I don't want to be like the weird sister that's like, I want to meet your friends. led to another. Annie reaches out and is like, I've got to meet you guys. And she's just took time out of, she was hosting this entire massive event and just took time to meet mom and I. And I was just telling Brooke before we went to record this. It's like, she's so warm and inviting that you immediately feel like you've known her your whole life. And I feel like even in this conversation that came across, and just the gift that she is to the world with her hopeful spirit while also speaking these truths that we all need to hear and really just bringing people together. She really brings people together and facilitates conversations that need to be happening in the world.
Yeah. It was such a lovely conversation. She has a book coming out soon called Where Did TJ Go? February 18th is when that comes out. Link will be in the show notes. An incredible book on grief, which we're going to talk at length about. We also talk about singleness in the church, which is such an incredible, she has so much to say. Mm-hmm. So if you are listening and you only listen to the first half, this is kind of like two episodes in one. It is a very important conversation, a very helpful conversation, very practical for pastors. How do you lead, teach, exhort, encourage singles in your church, and singles, how do you operate in a way that is actually helpful to the church, but also helpful to yourself and just helping whatever situation you're in. So please do that. If you haven't had a chance to rate or subscribe to the podcast, would you just even pause for a second and do that? And also remember, we're on YouTube, so you can watch this whole conversation there, which is really fun. But enjoy our conversation today with Annie F. Downs. Welcome back to the show. Annie Downs on the show today. Welcome.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. It's such an honor. I am thrilled about this.
I can't believe we were able to line this up, and praise God, we were able to overcome ridiculous technical issues. We figured it out. It was on our part. So I'm glad this worked out.
The enemy always comes to steal, kill, and destroy, brother. And that includes technology and podcasting. So always. We just know the truth.
I so agree. Well, listen, but we're going to talk about a new book you have coming out. We're going to talk about life. We have some topics, but you, before all that, you're a human. And we would obviously, if people have not heard of you and know what you do, they're silly and they obviously are very much isolated. They're living an idyllic monk style life, which is beautiful. No shade on that, but they obviously just have not heard about you. But obviously you do so many different things, speaking, writing, as people heard in the intro, podcast. But before all that, you're a human. I understand that you live in two places. Is this still true?
Yes. Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
Totally. So I grew up in Atlanta, but I've been in that. Well, what I like to say is I was born and raised in Atlanta, but I grew up when I got to Nashville. So I got to Nashville in 2008. I've been here 16 years, I think is the math. This is going to be my 17th year. Okay. And in 2020, and I've always loved New York City as well, but my joke used to be, well, until I have the budget of Jimmy Fallon, I'm not going to be able to live in New York because I'm 44 now. I don't want to share an apartment with 8 girls and 2 bedrooms. Like I'm just past that, right?
Yep.
And but then a couple of years ago, a friend, y'all are going to love this story. Elizabeth, I'm not sure if I've ever told you this, but in our conversations, but a friend of mine, we're sitting at New Year's in New York, the year it's going from 22 to 23. And she says, we're laughing about something. And I said, man, I wish I lived here with y'all. And she says, you know what's funny about you, Annie, is everything you say you're going to do, you do except this. And I was like,
wow,
let's go. I mean, that is like, I was like,
that a challenge?
Because my face was like shocked. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm not calling you out. And I was like, no. You're giving me an opportunity to be a woman of my word. I either need to change what I say or I need to change what I do.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
So that set me up to go, maybe I should live in New York for like 2 months, which was what I thought I was going to do. But y'all know, I'm sure, have y'all had John Tyson on before?
Oh, yeah.
I thought so. So Pastor John, Church of the City, New York is where I am when I'm up there. And he, like, my second weekend, he was like, are you moving here? I was like, no. I'm just here for 2 months. I got an Airbnb. I'm going to go back. And then by the end, it was October, November. By the end of November of 23, he was like, I walked up to him on a Sunday morning. I said, I got an apartment. He was like, yeah, mate, I know you did. Yeah. I know you did, mate. And so I do part-time there now. So for 2024, I was there about 40% of the time. I do like a couple of weeks. I'm not very scheduled. It'd be a lot smarter if I was like January to April, but I'm like 2 weeks up, 2 weeks back, 4 weeks up, 2 weeks back, four weeks there, 5 weeks here. So I'm very unscheduled about it, but it is so fun. New York has made me better for every city. I mean, New York has just made me a better person.
Okay. Elaborate on that. Tell us why and how.
Yeah, and I really love Nashville. So it isn't that I'm working on this essay right now about how I accidentally fell in love with New York and Nashville at the same time, and now I understand. I understand. And this is why I don't date 2 men at once, because I'm a know myself. So what it is, Elizabeth, is there's this like, the walking around helps a lot, because Nashville is not a pedestrian city.
Yep.
So there's my mental health is better in New York, because before I get home, I've walked out all my problems.
Yes, ma'am.
Right. Yeah. Like everything I process in my brain. Oh, yeah. I'm not a verbal processor. I'm an Annie processor.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if I'm just taking the train and I get off the subway to my house, is still 4 minutes, which is much farther than my driveway to my door.
Mm-hmm.
In Nashville. And so my mental health is better, but also there's like, y'all, I think y'all will get this. In New York, if you walk around and you think, I think I'm hot, everyone agrees. Absolutely everyone agrees. And so the confidence level of New York is like multifold like that. One of them is, however you showed up today, if you believe you brought the best, we believe you.
Yes.
Like we think so too. And do you know how people who have Jeeps wave at each other?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's this like, hey, we understand that we both kind of came from the same, made the same decision. There's a Jeep wave in New York of like, hey, I bet you gave up everything because you thought you were the best, didn't you? Good on you. You know? And that whole city is full of people who thought they were the best at what they do. Mm. And that is so fun to be amongst that. Now, in the unredeemed realms of that, it's really dark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there are really dark parts of that. In the redeemed realms of that, it is awesome to see some of the best faith people who are also the best at their jobs dominating in their field. I mean, Broadway right now is full of believers who are on stage 8 shows a week and all sit together at church on Sunday morning. I sit with them. I mean, they sit together at church on Sunday morning. And there's actors and actresses and government and bankers and lawyers. And you just go like, man, God has gifted you in so many ways and you've given your life to him. What can stop us now, right?
You know, that makes me think of like what you're describing, like this shared tenacity. And it makes me think New York is like, if you're going to move somewhere that's like just...
Wait, are you saying this? Because you know how much I've wanted to move to New York. We almost planted a church in New York. I don't want to talk about this. It's too sore.
He loves New York.
No, I just was there in December with a friend and it was like, we were there for like 5 days. I'm going to confess something right now. I was praying this morning. I was like, Lord, I don't know why this is still there. I don't think we're ever going to move to New York because my family can't handle it. Meaning like, I think it would break my whole family. Really, I do. So I'm just going to surrender it because I'll just visit. This was like this morning. So this is really funny.
You should have asked me.
No, I'm so glad we're asking. It's not a bad thing. This is a very, it's a worked out situation. I'm reserved to the fact that we don't all live out our ideals. That said, ask your question. I just think you're saying this great thing about New York. I'm like, I'm emotionally
adding fuel to your fire.
I'm emotionally up and down right now. I'm just going
to
be honest.
Can I just say to you, Brooke, that there is a different answer between all the way there and not all the way there.
That's what I'm saying. I think you and I share an affinity for personality types, and there might be a shared personality type that
that variety sounds that real
variety
nice.
Variety is an interesting part to how I survive my life. Anyway,
yes,
that's not the point. Yes, you were saying about New York.
Well, and I'm realizing what I'm about to say is probably going to segue us perfectly into the first topic.
Good job. Go.
Not on purpose. It just so happened. But I'm thinking of, if you're going to pick a place in the U.S. to live where like everyday lifestyle, and I'm isolating it to the U.S. because I'm not talking about third world countries, it's not a comfortable place to live in the sense of comfortable, convenient, inexpensive.
Right.
You know, it is a hard place to live.
Hard.
And I would just wonder, you know, and all we're learning about how just our culture, we're working so hard to just be comfortable and it's making us miserable and not having to work hard to physically move our bodies, not doing any sort of physical labor like our bodies were designed to do. Like the absence of that is not good for us. But I would imagine what you're describing, living in a place like New York and knowing what I know about it, you are living in discomfort in a way every day, and you're living in everything you just described, this like thing that's in the air that's
alive.
We're all doing this together. Totally. I wonder if it's because you're all living in also a shared discomfort and it's actually motivating you and helping you, not hindering you.
Well, it's like that saying you said it or not said it, but I've heard it. Like if I was alive during the Roman times, I'd live in Rome, right? Like it's like, New York is the hub of our world right now and still is and has been for a long time. And you feel the energy of that world. Anyway, yes, I think you're right, but you weren't asking me. I was just,
I'm adding you are right to your someday fire.
There's a really interesting thing. I'll tell you the time that it was last winter. I thought this is miserable. I cannot wait for it to be summer. And then summer got there and I was like, nah, dog, give me winter. Give me winter.
I've been in summer. It was miserable.
Oh, yes. I was there for all of June and part of July and I almost left halfway through because I was like, it's too hot.
Yes.
You
can't too humid.
It's too humid. You leave. So let me give you an example. In the winter, you leave your apartment. Let's say you're leaving at 9 a.m. for the day. So you got to be gone till after dinner. You've got your coat and your hat and your glove. You've got your bag. You've got your umbrella in your bag. Mm-hmm. You've got your water bottle. You've got your charger. You've like thought through leaving your house. You have to think constantly in New York, and which for my brain, it sounds like British pride, that is actually really invigorating to be like problem solving, puzzle making all the time.
Yes.
In the summer, when I leave my house at 9, 10 a.m. and I'm not coming home till after dinner, but I've sweat through my shirt before I get to the subway, what do you do?
What do you do?
And then on the subway are all these dudes in suits and they're pitted out miserable, but they have to go. I mean, it is so bad. It is so bad in the summer. And it's why everybody leaves in the summer and goes to the Hamptons. I mean, even my like Zumba instructor at the end of May was like, I'll see you guys in September. I was like, why? And then 3 weeks later, I was like, I get it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So yes, there is a lot of challenge to it. Mm-hmm. There is, my apartment is a fourth floor walk up with no elevator. And so every time I do groceries and when I get there with my luggage, I mean, just absolutely anything. I mean, when I bought a desk last winter off of Facebook Marketplace, and
you had to get it up there.
And my friend who is coming to help me, I've gotten a friend to come help me. It's 25 degrees outside, and I can't even get it up the stairs to go up. So it has to stay outside at night because I went and got it after work off Facebook Marketplace. This will be quick. We get it off Facebook. The Uber driver drops me off with my desk on the sidewalk. And I'm like, well, I can't get it inside. If I leave it here, someone could take it thinking it's garbage.
Yeah.
And I've just paid my full $25 for this desk. And so then I'm just standing outside crying because now my friend's train is late and she's not going to be there for 25 more minutes. And so I'm just waiting outside and I'm like, I'm freezing over a desk. And this is why I kept saying to myself, you didn't have to do this. You have a house. You didn't have to do this.
What kind of desk are you?
Yeah. You know where your desk is, Annie? Nashville, Tennessee. What kind of dodo bird does this? I mean, I was like, what have you done? And so stuff like that has shaped me.
Yeah.
And made me tougher. I mean, it is to be too Christian. It is the Romans 5 of like suffering produces perseverance and builds your character and gives you hope.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's not real suffering. That's standing outside over a desk. But it's a version of, I said to someone today, like, for the 2 days a year that you suffer in a way that feels beyond what your body can handle, you get to practice those muscles 363 days a year.
Yes.
So when I'm standing outside with my desk, I'm actually working out my perseverance and suffering muscles, even though it doesn't actually matter.
Yes.
Because then when the story like we're going to talk about, or when someone breaks up with me, or when I get disappointed over something, my muscle memory kicks in because I waited outside with the desk.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of practice in New York, suffering practice that serves me when I'm really suffering.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
that's why I want to move to New York. Annie, could you please just set up kind of a weekly
reminder?
Listen,
I got an apartment y'all can use besides 40% of the time. Some of your family is using it this year. It's already booked for some of your family. So y'all are very welcome to come use it.
Oh, well, man.
We will send you a text.
Yeah.
I mean it. I think you should.
You said it on air, so no one can be like, she didn't say it.
I do. I mean, the Lord has gifted it to me.
Sure.
And if it makes a way for other people that I love to get some time in New York, I'm very happy to share it.
New York's it's a magical spot. But so you live in two places, but you said there's a magical segue, and I wanted to.
Well, she was already taking us there. It's like you've done this before. By the time this comes out, you'll be releasing a book with your sister.
That's so cool.
Where did TJ go?
Really cool.
And clearly I got to read the book. It's beautiful, but clearly there's a heartbreaking story that the book is coming from, that is true and deep suffering to tie in just.
Yeah. I mean, there's kind of no way to prepare for every kind of suffering, right? Your muscle memory can only do so much, but
So, you know, every book comes out of somebody's story and lived experience or things they're learning or things they've witnessed. So clearly this is something that's come out of your family. So can you just walk us through the story of how this book even came about?
The first hope I want to give to your listeners who are parents is my sister and I were not friends growing up. So if you have
thank
two
you
kids,
for saying that.
Right?
Yeah.
If you have two kids who don't get along, guess what? I went to college and we didn't get along. Mm. So wow. It was not like, oh, when we were in high school together, it was cool.
Yeah.
We've no. never been cool.
Yeah.
And so to get to write a book together just also shows what God can do in the nuclear family once the kids are adults too. So
yeah,
keep on keeping on, parents, because there is you've got a lot of time for your kids to like each other.
Yeah.
But my sister, so I'm the oldest of three. My sister, we're only 15 months apart. That's the other part.
Wow.
Is we were only like we were two grades apart, but only 15 months apart.
Wow.
And so that was very close for two girls who are very different.
Yes.
And so she got married about 10 years ago and went through pretty quickly, started getting pregnant and having miscarriages.
Mm.
And so I'm not married yet. Our other sister is not married yet. And then in 2020, they had a miracle baby named Sam, who's like practically an idol in my life. I like him so much. He's just the cutest little redhead you've ever seen.
Oh, I've seen pictures. He's adorable.
He's in the book. He's adorable.
Yeah.
When he was two, Tatum and her husband Jacob got pregnant again. Mm. And it was about in the first trimester that we knew from the doctors that TJ had the baby had a life limiting diagnosis.
Oh.
And that without the intervention of God, that TJ may not even live through pregnancy, but would not live out of the womb. And it was, he was diagnosed with trisomy 18, which is your lungs don't fully develop, your heart doesn't, there's a lot to it, but mostly it is your vital organs aren't able to maintain life. So we did the thing that, I mean, one in four women have miscarriages. So if you add stillbirth, if you add tough medical decisions, if you add infant death, that is a lot of our friends who have lost a baby in some way or another. And so they have all been through what our family went through of, we know what God can do.
Mm.
We have to prepare for what doctors are telling us. But what if God changed the whole story? What if the miracle of this story was that TJ comes out and is perfectly healthy? But we also knew that's not what the doctors were saying. Mm. And so once we got closer to him being born, I started calling. I mean, y'all get this because y'all are in the same seat as me. Like, we've got phone numbers. And so I started calling people who I knew were experts. I started calling counselors and pastors. I called a couple of my friends who had lost children while raising other children. Because our biggest concern, which I'm sure y'all can relate to and have heard stories of, but our biggest concern was, how do we grieve while Sam is grieving?
Yeah.
Like, how do we help this two-year-old who is losing his little brother? And so I called all these people and I said, give me the book. Like, what's the book? And no one had one. There was not. There's a couple of, but there's one main book that people suggest, but it isn't a gospel story. And then there were smatterings of, have you tried this one? Have you tried this one? But there wasn't a book.
Yeah.
And I would have told you before we had a kid and our family died that there was a book. Mm-hmm. Like, surely there's a book. And so what I decided to do, because I didn't have a lot of things I could do to help in that season, was I was like, well, I can write a book for Sam. I can tell Sam a story like you prayed earlier, Brooke. I mean, story drives our lives.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, well, I will tell Sam a story and I'll help Sam. And so one day when I was driving from Franklin, Tennessee to Nashville, which is about 25 minutes, but you feel like you need a snack. It feels like it is so far. the thing I'll tell y'all, because we're all charismatic in our spirits, is the whole thing downloaded to me. I saw the whole movie. And so I saw the book. And so I just started talking and I'm just sobbing and I'm talking into my phone as I'm driving. Here's how I'll tell Sam. Here's how I'll explain what has already happened to TJ. And at the time we thought TJ would die in the hospital. So we're like, here's what happens when TJ doesn't come home. And then if Sam starts asking, where did TJ go? What's the answer of what heaven is? I got home that afternoon. I sat down, I listened to my voice recording and I typed up what I had said. And then I put it on in a Word document and I stole clip art from the internet and I sent it to FedEx and had them print two copies and laminate it. And I gave one to my parents and one to my sister and her husband and just were like, if this will help, here's a book. Here's a story. Since we can't find one, and here it is. So I never intended for this to be a published book that other families would need. I was just trying to fill a gap for my nephew, Sam. And so what ended up happening is TJ ended up living, thanks be to God and medical intervention, TJ ended up living for 56 days. He was 3 weeks in the hospital in the NICU and then 5 weeks at my sister and brother-in-law's house on hospice care for 24/7. It was unbelievable. And we can, y'all can, we can, especially for our parents and the families who have gone through this or will go through this, whatever questions you have about how that season went, I'm happy to answer. Yeah. Especially me living here and cousins and grandparents. And it was just a lot. So, then when we started reading it to Sam a few months after TJ passed away, I sent it to my agent and I just said, will you just see if the publisher, like, we needed this and it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And the through line, as you read, is there is good news even in sad stories. And that is the gospel, right? Yes. That there's good news in sad stories. Mm. And I just thought, I don't know that our publisher, Revell, will want to do this. It's so niche. How will they ever make their money and investment back on this? And, and they said yes immediately. They were like, this is a need. We know it exists. And we would love for you to fill it. And so then it was like, okay. So my sister, as she was reading it to Sam, was going, hey, this, you talk too much about the animals. Can we fix that? And you do this too much. And, you know? And so that's why she's the co-writer, is she made it better. She like helped me make it better at, from a mom's point of view.
Yeah.
And now it's going out. And I'll tell you, on the first week, one of the things Tatum and I say a lot is we wish we didn't need this book. We wish no one else needed this book, but we are really thankful to any family that we can serve with it now. Like, thanks be to God that we can serve these other families with it. And the first week, once we said it was open, or once we said it existed and was available, I'm signing these book plates that say in memory of, and you can submit your kid's name and I'll sign a book plate and we'll send it to you. It's free. You just buy the book wherever you want to buy the book. And then you tell me and I'll sign. In the first week, I did 300. Wow. 300. No. Many of them, three names. Two names, one of them, six baby names in one. And I just thought, how have these families survived any of this? How have they survived? And so you just go like, what holy sacred work God will use out of, and we're only 2.5 years out of TJ's death. So we aren't like past grief. We aren't like,
no, you're in it.
We weren't ready to turn this into like, let's go. You know, like it wasn't that. It was just like, well, the book is done. Do y'all want it? And so God, this is not the story we would have picked, but God redeems everything somehow. Right. And so,
yes.
And y'all, I mean, Elizabeth, you know me better than Brooke, but I'm also like, the enemy thought he was going to steal from us. He ain't seen, I have our sword tattoo. He ain't seen, you know, like,
it's come not on, happening.
Man. That ain't happening like that. Like, I got a sword tattoo on purpose, bro. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I never taunt the enemy like that. I'm just joking with y'all, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. He doesn't get to steal from us. We have lost a person in our family and in a very traumatic way. That is the short part of the story. Mm-hmm. The long part of the story is we'll be with TJ forever. And in the meantime, now we get to serve these other families in need. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for that.
As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to Legacy Builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify, and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give.
Wow. Oh, thank you for sharing that whole story.
Yes.
I like the book even more now, knowing the backstory of why you specifically wrote it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So many things I want to highlight, but I think first, the fact that in the midst of that happening in your family, sounds like it was before he was even born. You were just like preemptively like, how do we help?
Yeah, because we thought TJ wouldn't come home from the hospital. So yeah, we thought we would need it right away.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. But I just want to highlight the fact that you as his aunt, as a sister to your sister and brother-in-law, you proactively did something incredibly useful. You didn't ask them, can I do this? Would this be helpful? What should I include in it? You just did it. Yeah. Because you loved him so much. You didn't do
it. Yeah, it was my version of a casserole because I don't cook.
Yes.
The women who make, and men who make really good casseroles, that is your offering. Yes. I served my family in my gift set.
Yes, which I just love. And as a family who's walked through a lot of suffering and has had to navigate grief ourselves as parents and walk our kids through grief and trauma, it is so hard to do as a parent in the moment. It's so overwhelming. And if there's any bit of trusted people that can step in and say, here's what I can do, and I'm just going to do it.
Yes.
That is the most helpful thing you could ever do, that you threw yourself right into the midst of their story and pain. You didn't say, well, I don't understand because I don't have a 2-year-old or I haven't lost a child. You just said, I'm going to do what I do know is that there is beauty in really hard stories. What's the exact quote? That there is good news even in sad stories, you know?
Yeah, because the reality is y'all, the parents are grieving deeply at the same time. And so what we hope, the reason we were looking for a book is it's the idea of like, can we put something that's a conduit between parent and child that helps say things that the parent may not have language for yet?
Totally.
And can we hand a kid's book to the kid and let them look at pictures and use their imagination on their own while the parent is grieving? I mean, Elizabeth, we needed that.
Yeah. And I'm sure you know this, but kids process so much better through social stories like that, where they can, like, we have a daughter with disabilities, with a long health history. And right now she can't talk about what happened to her. And we're developing with a psychologist, like writing her story. So she has a social story so that she can understand what happened and how it's affected her. She can't make the connection between what happened and how her brain works now because of that. And so we're doing it in story form so that she has something that she can read on her own, that she can look at, that she can see and start to understand and embody. So you did that for your nephew and you did that for all of the other siblings and families, because like you highlighted, there are so many.
So many.
And it's not.
I had no idea.
Yes.
I had no idea there were so many.
Yes. And there are so many women that lose children like midway through pregnancy that either stillbirth, which all, you know, we hear stillbirth, or my goodness, TJ's situation of living for that many days afterwards, but knowing he was going to die. I mean, the horrific trauma of that. We hear so many stories about miscarriage, but they're kind of downplayed because, well, we weren't that far along. But so many women, they've delivered a baby. I mean, if you have a miscarriage midway through, that looks like a baby. You're connected to that baby.
And the thing, I mean, I've never been pregnant. Y'all have, I have been pregnant emotionally, and I've been pregnant with stories and with hopes.
Yes.
And what happens when there is a miscarriage is not only are you losing the baby, you're losing the vision of your family that you 100%. Have had.
100%.
And so, and that's true. My guess is that's true in y'all's story, that this part of the grief is this isn't the story we thought we'd have.
Totally.
So that's why I want families who have miscarriages to know that we don't look at them and think it's less of a loss.
No.
None of your friends say, we recognize that not only have you lost a baby, you've lost a vision of the family you thought you were going to have. We believe you. Mm-hmm. We know that. So
in those types of situations, in any really profoundly hard thing, you also lose oftentimes the view of God that you had.
Yep. Oh.
Because these questions that you thought you had, you know, usually these like trite Christian answers, God works together all things for the good of those who love him. Like all these scriptures that we've unfortunately taken most of them out of context.
Right.
Your whole view of God is shaken. And it can be shaken in an incredibly destructive way, or it can be the biggest gift that ever could have happened to your faith and that's to your walk with Jesus. And so to give kids a way to begin to process that, a framework to process that. And what I love about the book is that it is very hopeful, but it's very honest. Mm-hmm. You tell the honest story that there was excitement and a baby's coming and there's a baby in mom's belly. And then you tell the story of there's the baby died, you know? Yes. And I just think you wrote it in just such a beautiful way that kids could really grasp onto and process and have a framework. Like I think back to, I had a framework that suffering existed, but I had no framework for like how you walk through that with God. Yeah. And I think of, man, if that's our kids are being told stories about grief, like honest, true grief, and they're watching it happen and they're watching God and what the fact that God is always present with us, what that actually looks like at a young age, man, can you imagine as they get older and their own story starts to play out and real hard things start to happen to them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll be so much further down the road than any of us ever were, you know?
It's so
it's one of the reasons in the book that after we show some scenes of heaven, we go back to Sam being sad that his brother's not there.
Oh, so
it's because we really wanted to model like all that is true.
Yeah.
But also Sam is still going to wish he had a brother to play baseball with.
Yeah.
Like thank it's you. Great yeah. that TJ's yes. healed,
yes.
but that doesn't it's not the only thing. The sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a big proponent of holding joy in suffering. I mean, it is the growth of my life. It is the story of my life was when I started understanding holding joy and sadness together.
Yes.
And so I really want to do that for that exact reason. Because I'm like, if a 5-year-old gets a hold of this because they've lost siblings, or we've had people be like, I mean, someone DM'd me in December or in early January and said, my husband died over Christmas. Will this help our family? And I was like, oh my gosh. And I was like, it is a baby dying, but we paint heaven. So if it will help to paint heaven and to hold joy in suffering, then yes, I hope it does. But but my thinking is exactly what you said is if we can plant early, joy and suffering will coexist for your entire life. Then that would have eased up my 20s pretty significantly.
So I'm rereading Tim Keller's Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering.
If you haven't never read it.
Oh my gosh.
Well, you'll read it for the rest of your life because it is it's amazing.
You and I don't read those books, right? That's not our personality.
Well, hey.
He does now.
The best phrase I ever got, if you are a similar type of personality and wherever you land on the Enneagram scale, if your greatest need is to avoid pain, then I will just say that the best gift I was ever given was when my therapist said to me, the thing that will shape you the quickest and the most is when you experience pain you can't reframe. And he said, it's actually the best thing for you. And so my life has been for the last 15 years, pain I can't reframe. And so it's forced me to have a new diet and a new level of content like that before would have been just the most off-putting, wrong-fitting, ill-fitting situation to where it's like, the non-reframe, like to be up against a situation that you can't make look pretty and no matter how you look at it, it just is hard and lame. It's been one of the biggest gifts and I would not wish it upon my worst enemy if you have that personality type. So, But yes,
I have never heard that. I've had very good counseling for the last 12 years. I have never heard pain you can't reframe because one of our gifts is the ability to reframe.
Yep.
Yeah.
Also,
it's
one
good.
Of the
it
things
is a gift.
And so it saves other people all the time. Yes. I think what buoys other people is often what sinks me.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying is, I mean, this book is a version of reframing, isn't it?
No, it's actually not. I was actually going to highlight, you're not ignoring the pain.
That's true.
You're not. No, I was actually going to say, that's actually what I like about this is that if you would have just said, he's in heaven, okay, that's reframing.
Yeah.
You went back to the end of saying, and you still have to sit in tension because tension is the guarantee of this life. In many ways, Jesus always is asking us to sit in tension, the now and not yet, the grace and the truth, the kingdom that is here, but not yet. Tension is the operating mode of the kingdom.
Yes.
And so yes, it's interesting that you're, you know, yeah, the pain you can't reframe is a gift to a personality type like myself. And I maybe imagine you at the same time, reframing really helps in hard situations. So yeah. in one sense, there's that truth that when you can't reframe pain, that's just too great. That's good. It's also a really helping coping strategy, and it makes you usually a lot happier than other people during really hard moments. And so, I mean, both are true. And yeah. I remember I was asking my therapist about that, and he had just said, I was like, I can't believe I was like frustrated with my family about something. My dad was passing away. He had cancer, and my mom was reframing it in this way that was like not connected to reality. And he said, yeah. And that's really effective for her, isn't it? And I was like, yeah, I guess it is. She's not feeling the weight of all this right now. And he's like, probably really helpful for her where she's losing her husband. Huh? I was like, I feel like you're supposed to side with me on this, but
right.
Like both are true. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about, but no, you did not reframe.
Helpful,
I think
it
highlight that this is not a reframing.
Yeah.
This is actually, you have to have the perspective. What you gave people is a perspective that the death, the loss, the pain is only one part of the whole story.
Yeah.
And you got to give the whole story.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful.
Thank you.
Is the Tim Keller's book, the whole kind of the last, it's like three parts. The last part is more practical of like, how do we walk with God in the midst of suffering? And he was unpacking the verse in 1 Peter 1:6. It says, in all this, you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, you may have had to suffer griefs in all kinds of trials. And what he highlights is that the rejoicing and the suffering, the grief in all kinds of trials, which is any kind of suffering that covers it all, they're both in the present tense. It is not you are joyful now because you used to have a trial and it's over now, so you're joyful.
Right.
It's you rejoice and you are experiencing these trials both in the present tense, that whole idea of joy and sorrow, that they exist at the same time. And for me too, who tends to never reframe things for the positive, I just go like doom and gloom.
I'm always, please come up out of the quicksand, sweetheart. I dare you. Just think of it positively at all.
But when real hard stuff started happening in our lives, I did not understand that the two could coexist at the same time. Yeah. I thought it was, I get over the hard and then I'm joyful. And so why am I not joyful yet? Why is it taking me so long to get over the hard? And now the beauty that sits in the tension of both, and it is a hard tension. It is some days it just feels hard and some days it feels much lighter and you forget about the hard and then you're...
I was going to say though, I know you picked a topic. This topic is very obviously relevant to us in the sense of like we're... Such a passion. But I know we only have so much time. So what I wanted to say, because this is obviously something, I mean, we're receiving from this book. So thank you, truly. And I think so many people are. I know we want to take a hard right turn. And I think it's the best right turn.
If we've got time for it.
We totally do. If you have a couple more minutes, I think.
Yes, of course.
You know, able to cover the book and that will be out, you know, right after this comes out, the book will be coming out. So pre-order it, go rate it, do all the things that you're supposed to do to help somebody when the book goes out, because this is a true gift.
Needed book. Yeah.
But a hard right turn. You said you want to do a hard right turn.
Okay. We're going to totally pivot to singleness.
Yeah. It's so good. It's such an important thing for married and singles to talk about. So I love getting to do this with y'all.
Yes. So I want you to take this wherever you want to go, but you started something called the Single Purpose League. You are teaching about singleness and the church. You are educating us on all the things we need to know about that. And it's your lived experience and it's your story.
Yeah.
And we talked before we hit record, you know, primarily the people that listen to this podcast are families. So most likely their parents in some way, shape or form. And yet we as the church are called a family, which means the married people, the single people, the children, the grandparents, we're all a family. Mm-hmm. And so how educate us, like take us wherever you want to go, but at some point educate us as families. Mm-hmm. How do we be the church to single people? How do we invite you into our family? What does that look like? What does Annie need Speak for all single people.
It's so kind of you to ask. I'll tell you the honest thing between married and we'll stick within the world of believers only outside of the body of Christ, married people operate differently, but single people operate very differently. Mm-hmm. Their disappointments are different. Their hopes are different. Mm-hmm. The setup of how they got here is very different.
Yeah.
And so while a lot of our friends listening probably have non-believing singles at their job or in mm-hmm. their family or in their life, for this, we'll just kind of stay because it's important to talk about the disappointment.
Yeah.
That our single believer friends have that is unique to being a Christian.
Yeah.
And so what I would say first, Elizabeth, is the higher communication than you think you need between singles and marrieds. Like thinking about inviting a single person over to your house and going like, Annie won't want to come. The kids are insane. It's a full moon. I don't even know what I'm making for dinner. It's going to be something out of there's no way she'll want to come. Well, you've said no for me and not given me a chance to show up with your family. Mm. And where I may go, hey, I can't come tonight. I'm going to go to a yoga class. And that's what I can do because I got the time and I don't have the kids. And so I can go do that. Or I go, you know what? I was going to go to a yoga class, but Elizabeth sounds a little harried and it sounds like, and I love being with their family. So it sounds like it'd be really fun and a good help if there was another set of grown up hands there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll do that instead and I'll never tell them. Right. Wow. And so what you have to do is just raise communication. This happens a lot when single people want to be set up by their married friends, but they don't talk about it very well. And so what happens is singles are disappointed that their church friends haven't set them up with anybody. Married people are worried that they're going to get their single friends heartbroken and it's going to fracture their relationship. Mm-hmm. And so all we have to do is talk about it.
Yeah.
So and honestly, I put this as more on the single person than I do the married couple, because I'm like, hey, if you want your married friends to set you up, here's what you should do. We just said this to all of Single Purpose League in February. We said, go to two people that you have not said this to recently and say, I would love to be set up with somebody that you know that isn't married, that is looking to be in a relationship. And I'd love for you to set me up in February. And that is a different, right? That's a different ask to y'all than if I just said, do you know anybody? Right. Then all of a sudden you're picking up your phone and being like, okay, there is that worship pastor that lives like 30 miles away, but he's not married. So maybe I'll just text him and see. And the trust has to be, do you believe that the person on the other side of this relationship, the married couple or the single person, is telling you the truth? Do you believe that they'll say yes when they want to say yes? Do you believe they'll say no when they want to say no? And you just have to operate that they are grown up enough that they're telling you the truth until they prove you different. Right. And so then you say, will you please set me up? I would love to go. I haven't been on any first dates. I'm doing online dating, but they're not really working. And I'm curious if you have friends you haven't thought about, could I meet one this month? And it just, the higher communication from the singles gives you the opportunity as the marrieds to go, I will totally think about that. No one comes to my mind right now. But I will think, because you said February, I would love to think about it. Or, you know what? There is that worship pastor. Okay, I don't know if you're going to even like him. Don't hold me to it. I mean, you know, all the things you got to say. So there's so much like that between our, and I'll tell you, y'all can relate to this as church people, pastors. What happened when we were growing up is in the attempt of our churches to teach us sexual purity, they taught us a finish line, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And which I have so much grace. They didn't have the internet. They didn't have tons of teaching. They were coming out of parents from the 40s and 50s. I like, grace.
Yes.
But those of us that went through youth group in the 90s and the 2000s got this like, if you will just hold on until you get married, you get to do whatever you want.
Yes.
So what that did is set up a finish line on a race that we were all on together.
Yes.
And it set up this finish line that said, when you get to that finish line, you get to have sex. You get your calling. You get to be in family. You get to know what God has for your life.
Yes.
Now, did they say it like that? They probably didn't.
But that is what we caught, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's everything we caught.
Because they didn't talk about anything else.
That's
right. And so it's not even. Yeah.
Yep. Go.
Yeah.
Sexual purity is still a part of y'all's life, like it's a part of my life.
Yeah.
It just looks different. But what we were taught is there's a finish line that you don't have to think about it anymore. Yeah. And the reality is scripture is very clear that sexual purity is birth to death.
Yeah.
Like it never stopped being a part of your life.
Yes.
So because we taught that finish line, let me tell you what your 40-year-old single friends feel. They feel deeply disappointed with God. Because we taught as the church, we said there is one path. We are all on it. God will meet you on that path, and then you'll get to the finish line and get to get married. And 46% of adults right now did not get to do that. And so their problem is not with their youth pastor from 1997. Their problem is with God.
Wow.
And it is really, really bad. It's
so
bad.
Insightful.
Yeah.
Can you, I mean, understandably, me too, but understandably, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, we thought we were all on the same road to an abundant life.
Yeah. Yes. Does that bring, I just have a curiosity question. That has got to bring a certain level. It's obviously a lie, but I could imagine the subtext that that person might feel, or even you feel specifically, is like shame, or is there something wrong with me, or what, like I can only imagine the subtext being so loud and so not true. Mm-hmm. But like, how would you in it with, if that's the message, and I know, cause I was in the same time frame as you.
Yes.
That is like, those are the byproducts. The fruit of it is shame. And of maybe a feeling of brokenness or worthlessness or like not worthy, or I'm not sure. These are words that are just, you know, obviously.
You're right.
How do you work through that? Like how do you work through those feelings? Because obviously that's not true. None of those things I said are even absolutely true at all. How have you worked through that? And how are you working through that?
Yeah, actively, like joy and suffering. I mean, part of it is this one big conversation we're having about the communication between married and single people.
Sure.
The more my married friends have brought me into their village, the more I have understood that family was not the only way it was defined to me when I was growing up.
Wow.
And so that has helped, because I go like, oh, these kids think of me as family. Like, like there's another friend of ours named Annie, and the one of her kids said to me, well, you could have our last name. There could be two Annie Barnes. And I was like,
that's right.
Thank you. You're right.
So good.
And that is just like, he thought, why wouldn't you have our last name?
Sure.
Yeah.
As a 5-year-old, right? Adorable and so
that.
Loving. But it's because Dave and Annie have modeled me being, and other singles being family to their kids.
Yes.
So that helps a lot.
Okay.
Pastors are trying. They really are. There is not a pastor, listen to this, who is like, you know what? I hope the singles don't feel welcome at our church. Of course not.
Of
course not. They are so if 46% of the U.S. in the 2023 census was unmarried, 24% of the church is currently unmarried, according to Barna.
Wow.
So not married, never married, divorced, or widowed, a quarter of the church.
Wow.
That's crazy. That's a crazy high number. And so to answer your question, Brooke, the way you deal with it is what we need to see in church is conversations about it from the stage of going like, hey, we believe so much in getting married. We want people to get married, to multiply. Like, let us help you meet somebody. Let's teach on healthy marriage, but also because singles sit through healthy marriage conversations, let's let some married sit through healthy singleness conversations.
Yes.
Love it.
And model it by having single people teach, because there is this theology you need to, need to ask some questions about, like, is a 40-year-old male pastor more reliable if he's married?
No,
is he more trustworthy if he's married? Is what are you asking about a 40-year-old single guy who has done all the work that the 40-year-old married guy has done to be trained and to fast and to pray, and he went to seminary? Do you think they're different?
And
we've got to start doing some of that internal work, because even as a single, I have to do that internal work.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Well, tell me, all of that will deal with our shame, Brooke. All of that will deal with that feeling like other. Yes. The more the church models that this is an abundant life too, even if you're longing for something different, you don't have to be like, you know what? I have the gift of singleness. I can't wait. Woof. I hope I don't. But today I do, right? Like, yes. Yeah, I hope it in my life, but
yeah.
But I like seeing single people teach on stage about holiness or about the life of Jonah. I don't need them to get up and talk about being married or being single. I want them to get up and talk about Jesus because their path of life is abundant, just like a married person's.
Well, which makes me think Jesus was single. Right. Never do we say, well, he didn't really fully know everything he was teaching because he wasn't married and didn't have kids.
Yeah, like, that's right.
I think there's something there that is not, we don't talk about that. We
don't talk about that. Anna the prophetess. I mean, there are some beautiful marriages modeled. I love putting like Anna and Elizabeth and Zachariah, same time frame.
Yes.
May have been neighbors, may have known each other. Both in the book of the first couple of chapters of Luke. A good marriage modeled, a good life of singleness modeled.
You know, you identified earlier, but I think it was before we probably hit record, you were identifying the problem that a lot of pastors even have, the challenge that they have. Maybe speak to that, like, because their path is different.
So what did you say?
I wanted to say, because it was the way you said it was great.
Yeah,
I'm so sympathetic to it, especially now that it's our, you know, it's our peers that are running churches most of the places, right? Yeah. Like the 40-year-olds are either the lead pastors. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're seeing some really amazing leaders come up behind us in their 20s and 30s for sure. But when you look across the the atmosphere or whatever, that if you look across the world of church leaders, it's 40s and 50s and the 60s, 70s are handing over. So what we are seeing is that the married pastor who's 44 like me got married at 21 because there is this...
they bought into the thing.
what you hear a lot of pastors say is, I knew I was called to ministry, so I had to get married. I mean, a very famous pastor who had a whole documentary about him said, I was ready to go into ministry. So I looked around for a wife on the documentary.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people went into seminary and got married, a lot of men. And so what that means is they have not experienced being single in 2025 and God love them. They got no training in seminary 20 years ago on what to do when a quarter of your church is unmarried. And so our married friends and our pastor friends are doing the best they can to not be offensive and to and to not be afraid to talk to us, but they don't have any training or experience. Meanwhile, the singles in your church are complaining constantly. And they are because there is a disappointment with God, and that is fleshing out with how they feel about the church. And so, of course, pastors are scared because singles are complaining. Of course, singles are complaining because pastors are scared.
Yes.
And so grace to both sides, grace to both sides. But can we build a bridge that says, hey, pastors, we'd love you to talk about this. We understand you're trying and we love you for trying. Hey, singles, start solving the problem instead of talking about it. If you're, I posted about it a couple of weeks ago and three people from the same church commented, we don't have anything like this at our church. And I said, have you met Katie and Martha here? Can the three of y'all get together and start?
Yes.
If y'all are telling me you go to the same church, solve the problem. So I'm out here trumpeting to Single Purpose League and to any singles that are listening to me, don't leave your church, start solving the problem.
Yes.
And then saying to, in fact, I'll share this with y'all, and y'all can share it with your audience, but we made this resource that's totally free called Pastoring Singles that we like built with some single friends, but some of our married pastors and some single pastors all put in on this that is just a start a conversation. And so to the pastors, I say, get this resource and then sit down with three singles in your church and go like, what can we do?
Yeah.
What can we do? And what do you need? And what can we provide? We did a survey when we started Single Purpose League about a year ago, and there's about 2,000 people that are in there. About three have come in and out, 3,000. And so we did a survey and we said, do you feel like your church is supporting you? And 65% said no or not really. But here's the hope. This is the wild part. We said, where do you want to meet someone? Four of the top 10 were all church or church adjacent. So they're there. Wow. They want to be there. And so pastor, I want our pastors and leaders to hear me say like the singles want to be at church. They just want to feel seen there. And dear singles, if there's any single parents listening or single friends listening, your pastor is trying. You're asking him to understand a planet he has never lived on.
Yeah.
Go explain the planet. That you are asking him. It's like you're asking him to do church in French without giving him a single book or a subscription to Duolingo. So you have, we have got to help our pastors instead of complain.
Oh, I was going to ask, what should singles do? What should pastors do? You just said it all. That is exactly, I mean, so practical, so helpful.
And a common thread from what you just said and what you were saying about families and singles, your like through line common thread is talk about it. Talk about it. Talk about it.
Talk about it.
Let's cut through the awkwardness. Let's just talk about it. And what I hear you saying is Oh no, I was just going to say, what I hear you saying is the singles, they're ready to talk about it. They're not offended to talk about it. They're like kind of asking for somebody to talk about it and start the conversation. Yes. Am I right?
A lot of them are. And, and if they aren't, they'll tell you, right?
Yes.
I had a friend here set me up on one date. It did not work. Super nice guy, not my guy. But I sent her an email afterwards. I was like, you took a risk because you don't know me super well and you know him super well. And I am so thankful that you took the risk, right? Like in a world where y'all meet someone new this weekend and you think, that guy might, Annie might like that guy.
We're
you
doing
text
it.
Me.
I'm on the hunt for you selflessly. I know you're not necessarily asking us, but we're going to over insert ourselves.
Here's what you get to do. The communication is, hey, Annie, this new guy came to church on Sunday. I know he didn't live in Nashville or New York, but do you want to look him up on Instagram? Do you want to meet him? And I can say to you, this isn't the case, but I could say to you, I'm dating someone right now. Thanks for thinking about me. I just broke up with someone. I'm barely breathing. Let me call you back. Or, go for it. But that's you're so giving fun. Me the opportunity to say what place I'm in. And the single has to be willing to go, hey, I asked you to set me up. Now I can't say I'd rather sit on my couch. I need to go.
There's so many angles we could go. I just wanted to, I so appreciate that last word. I think so helpful, so prophetic, so encouraging. Even to give hope to pastors and to singles, because it's really easy to demonize either side, you know, for the pastors to get mad at the singles because they're complaining, right? Like you had highlighted, or, you know, for the singles to be like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. And truth be told, they don't know what they're talking about. That is it. The problem you set up is it's unfortunate, but it is absolutely true. There is such a new awareness of everyone going like, well, we have, and people getting married later, right? And then people having kids later. Even parenting in different, when you start parenting in your 40s versus, you know, your 20s, it's a different deal. You're a different person when you're 40 versus 20,
can
right?
Can you imagine if I have a kid in the next couple of years and I have a kindergartner at 50 and my kid's friends' parents are 22? It is going to be a different, I'm going to need different parent training than some other people. You're exactly right.
Well, 100%. And you'll have so many things that honestly they don't. And at the very same time, I see the beauty in all of it. I'm just going to say this now. We need to have a longer conversation. We need to do this again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because this is so lovely. And we need to have some follow-up because this is just so rich. Where did TJ go? Comes out February 18th. Yeah. Everybody needs to go get it. Can I ask just one final question?
Yeah, of course.
One final question. What is one thing that you're learning right now? It does not have to be on any topic of this, but one thing you're learning right now that has just been encouraging, helpful, just like, hey, this is what I'm learning right now.
Okay, what am I learning right now? I am, so like in the practical way, I am learning how to check my tires when they're too, because it's changing so much right now because of the weather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm learning to do, so that's I'm learning good. To pay more attention to my tires. So that's a practical thing.
Yeah.
Spiritually, the thing that I'm sitting on, or better said, the thing the Lord feels like he's sitting on me about is in Hebrews, when it's like, without faith, it's impossible to please God.
Mm.
That has like mucked up my life for a couple of weeks. Of like, okay, so what does faith look like? So you back up to the top of that chapter and it's like, faith is being sure of what you hope for and certain of what you can't see. How do we do that? What does that mean? How do I make sure scripture's informing what I'm hope for and what I can't see? So that's kind of what the Lord and I keep cycling around right now. He tends to like set me in a concept for an extended amount of time. Yep. I might be a slow loader, but so that is, that's what I'm sitting in right now is what does it look like? Man, I said to my pastor at Crosspoint here, Pastor Kevin, I just said, I would love for you to call the Lord and for him to go, hey, I'm pleased with Annie because of her faith. Not because of what she's, her stuff or whatever, her relationships, whatever, but like, yeah, I'm pleased with her faith. And I just would love to get that report card. And so I'm trying to figure out how to get that report card.
Wow. That is so beautiful. Yeah. And at the very same time, I wouldn't say that you're a slow learner. I would say that God is implanting deep truth into you. And that just takes time. So you're not a slow learner. You're a deep thinker.
Well, you're kind. Yeah. Maybe both. Let's give it both.
Thank you so much. We could not be more happy with this conversation. Sure. I don't want to, I just, this has been so lovely, hasn't it?
So good. I could go on for 2 more hours, but we'll spare
you
that.
I wish we could. No, you're so kind. Thank you so much. And listen, I mean, I hope I was clear enough about this, but I hope you'll do it in the outro too, that like pastors and singles are both doing the best they can. Yeah. No one's the enemy here. Yeah. Everyone, they actually are on the same team. They want the same thing. They want the church to be full and whole and successful in the flourishing kind of way.
Yes. So. Mm. And I love that you are stepping in the gap and with such a hopeful voice. And you're saying, here, let me help this side and let me help this side. Let's all figure this out together. Yeah. I think God has uniquely positioned you and uniquely called you. And I think your voice, the tending towards the positive, the hopeful, the joy in your spirit is the needed voice to bridge the two gaps, the scared and the blanking on the word, the complaining, the scared and the complaining. Yeah. Yeah. You're bringing a whole different voice, but you're not shying away or reframing things to a level that's not helpful. You're saying, come on guys, let's talk about this together and figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think God's using you greatly in that.
Oh, thanks. I hope so. I hope he doesn't, I don't want him to waste a single day of mine. So I want him to use them up.
Yeah, he's not. Yes. He's not.
Thank you. Well, follow Annie on all of her channels. We'll link them all in the show notes. Thank you so much, Annie.
Thanks, friends. Thanks for having me.